This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio, doing our wandering nature news again for the month of October with our continuing guide to all things phenological and natural world oriented, Michaela Rice, the naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park. Thanks for joining me, Michaela.
Yeah, happy to be here. The fall has definitely arrived. The pressure system, which I'm sure we'll talk about, kind of shifted a few weeks ago, and the cold wind really, really has set forth the stage of fall. We had such a nice warm September that I wasn't really feeling like winter was actually coming, but now the cooler wind is getting my mindset on winter, but the sun is getting a little bit more intense. I do appreciate that about fall. You know, it's a little bit lower, and I did get to see a little bit of the eclipse the other day.
Oh, on Saturday, I believe it was.
Yeah, Saturday I don't know afternoon. If I've actually ever seen an eclipse before. I had access to those little sunglasses, so I was able to safely see the eclipse. So that was really neat.
Yeah, they were warning us because it was an incomplete eclipse at our latitude that it still mattered, eye protection.
Yeah.
But you pointed out we had a lot of warmth followed by a lot of cloudiness, and now it's more fall-like in that we're seeing that sun, and you're calling it intense. Of course, it's not as strong as it is in the midst of the summer, but it's kind of neat that it's lower in the horizon and you're looking up at it,
mm-hmm.
and it on a 55-degree day, it's your friend.
Yes, it feels more intense that way because maybe the air is so much colder. So
yeah,
that was a good explanation.
We've finally had, at least inland, and you could speak to this because most of your time in Gooseberry is probably pretty close to the lake. We've had a couple of real frosts that have taken down the annuals, and you know, so now those goldenrod are all done, and the New England aster is the last plant hanging in there. But along the shore, do you think you've had a hard killing frost?
I'm not sure if we've had a hard killing frost. I saw that white frosty dew one morning, up the highway and in the grass around the visitor center, but I don't know how cold it was that night overnight, but I'd say most of our flowers have died this last week. I'm actually kind of waiting. I've been waiting for that because I'm doing some seed collection for the pollinator garden, and it will be this week. So hopefully there's enough goldenrod seeds, although my goldenrod is the most prominent, and I guess it's doing the best right now at the pollinator garden, so I guess I don't have to worry about collecting too many goldenrod seeds. But there are some places, some bare ground that I could use the goldenrod to help keep some of the invasives out. But I'm going to try to find some bee balm. There was a lot of like black-eyed Susans and different grasses that were blooming at Split Rock in that new Shipwreck Creek Park campground area that they heavily have seeded the last few years, so I got permission to go and collect some good seeds and really diverse flowers out there, so I'm excited, and we'll just keep at the pollinator garden, put it to bed this fall, put a little hay down where I reseed, and they're going to mow it just like they do every year for the ski trail, and we'll resume in the spring.
Well, sometimes the prep, having ground receptive to the seed that isn't just covered in duff and other invasive-like species, did you do any fire or tilling or?
We will be I'll be doing some tilling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there really isn't any duff at all, so I don't have to worry about that too much. But we will try to break up the soil again a little bit before I put those seeds and put a little bit of hay so they don't just blow away because there's really nothing to cover.
Right, it's getting a good start. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly, being held down onto the landscape, because otherwise these seeds are not exactly very dense and they can take off and not be where you thought you put them.
Right.
Well, that's exciting. And someday I think we would like to do a session where we talk to some local experts like Dan from Shoreview Natives about how people can do some of this in their own home habitats. But out there in the woodlands and shorelands, leaf color change this year has been rather interesting. What are your observations, Michaela?
So I'm not an expert. I've only seen this now my second year. And I felt that the fall color started earlier. It was more spread out. Places where there was a lot of heavy drought inland a little bit started early. And then up kind of at the base of the Sawtooth Mountains and Silver Bay and Beaver Bay, they really had a lot of the maples and oaks start turning brilliant oranges and reds over 3 weeks ago.
It was early and
yeah,
intense.
It was like mid-September.
It happened at once.
Yeah. Yep. And so I was like, wow, this whole thing is going to be really fast. But it kind of slowed down after that, and there was some rain in there. And now the birches and the aspen are really gold everywhere. And now the last 2 weeks, the maples around Gooseberry, we don't have all the maple and oak types that other parks do, but
sure,
our maples are what I would consider peak right now. And they're more kind of in time with the aspen and the birch that are just so gold and so prominent at the park.
And that's what's so interesting about the spatial distribution, because away from the lake, our maples have been bare now. Almost all the maples, with a few exceptions, been bare for a week to 10 days.
Okay, and yeah, we still have pretty much all of the leaves still on our trees, I'd say, besides the ashes, like we talked
yes.
about. Those go really early.
And then Katja Gordon, who speaks with the DNR climatologist, learned last Friday, he said, I'm looking out my window and everything is green. He said, we're 2 solid weeks behind.
Where is he?
He's in the cities in St.
Oh,
Paul.
Oh, wow.
So he was admitting this is very exceptional. They're still looking at green. And Katja pointed out, oh, then we can reverse the whole North Shore visitor thing, and the North Shore visitors can go south to see some of the leaf change that they might have missed.
Yeah, let's clog up their streets.
Yeah,
just kidding. No, it's been fun to see a lot of different, just new people or people who come up every fall. The visitorship does change. They get the name Leaf Peeper, but I do enjoy some of the, maybe people just have more time during the week. People who are retired can come up during the middle of the week at the park, and they have such good questions, and they're well traveled, and they know what they want to see and what they want to learn. And I'm just like, yeah, like I would love to sit here and talk to you about this and, you know, let them pick my brain a little bit. And I always learn something too, so that's always enjoyable.
Yes, and I'm sure that you, being only your second fall here, that you're still finding out what questions to even ask at times.
Yeah, and what they're going to ask me. I've also learned that a lot of people do not know why trees lose their leaves. So we start at the basics.
And you're not talking about myth, but you're talking about science.
No, like, yeah, literally, why? And why does it happen in the fall? I'll ask kids, you know, what's going on right now? Or why do trees lose their leaves? And they just say, well, it's fall. You know, but why? What happens in fall? And they just have no ideas. And then I'm explaining it to them, and their parents are in the back, and they're the ones like, oh, wow, I didn't know this either. So,
right. It'd be interesting to see how many do any of their own homework. I suppose with the interweb,
mm-hmm.
it's only a Google question away.
Yep.
But do they really read the answer?
I think some of them looked at, I had a little sign out that said, why do trees shed their leaves? Answer for a little prize, you know?
Yeah.
And some people thought it was a riddle, but I bet you some people didn't stop and they Googled it right after they were too shy to talk to me about it. So
in a couple of sentences, what do you usually tell folks? What are the highlights that they need to know about why the leaves are changing color?
I ask, you know, what happens in winter? And, you know, it's cold and it's snowy. And those really are big things for trees because they have that live tissue. So leaves get really damaged when they're frozen, and so they're dropping them to prepare for freezing and then for the weight of all that snow, in addition to the fact that they really can't make a lot of energy in the wintertime. So they are shedding those leaves to protect the rest of the organism while keeping their losses at bay, so not gaining more injury and not losing all those nutrients through the damaged leaves.
Yeah. The cost benefit, the bioenergetics, I guess, is a fancy way of putting
it.
And their metabolism shifts rootward.
Yeah. And so the mechanism is, the metabolism shift, the drawing the energy out of the leaves starts with, you know, the dying of the chlorophyll, that green part that we talked about, but that's not necessarily the reason. So explain kind of why evolutionarily beneficial it is to lose leaves, and then talk a little bit about the mechanism and how when the chlorophyll dies, the green stuff, most people do know that the green in plants is how it makes energy, or it's associated somehow with energy production.
So do you ever get a young inquiring mind say, but what about those conifers that keep green all winter long? What's the deal there, Ms. Naturalist?
Nope. No one has kind of transferred that, into the needle thing.
It's a different evolutionary option, a branch.
Yeah, our strategy,
of the,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that in sometimes, or on our tours, I'll mention, you know, as we're walking, some trees that lose their leaves or some that keep it. But yeah, it's hard to kind of go into those things sometimes. But
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, we do. You know, I just try to explain it stuff. But it just, at the end of the day, nature is complicated. It's complex. So, but if someone learns something little, you know, that's great too. Just the reminder, I guess, like you were asking me, the bright reds and even the duller reds, kind of the cherry maroon and stuff, that's that anthocyanin pigment that you can see once the chlorophyll or the green pigment dies. And then the carotenoids is what creates the yellow and a little bit of orangey. So like aspen and birch, they don't have any anthocyanin. They don't ever get any tinges of red.
Well,
some plants have mixtures. Some probably have less carotenoids and just mostly have anthocyanin.
But anybody taking a drive or who happens to fortunately live amongst a lot of aspen and birch right now in the woods, it's a nice show of the golden side.
It's
of
very
the leaf
spectacular.
Change right now.
Yeah, the birches really just pop with how white they are.
It just surprised me. It shook me. I went for a walk, came back towards my house, and the big birch right in front of our house, suddenly I realized that's as beautiful as any of the maples that I saw, and I'm always talking up maple, maple, maple for the, you know, the theme song of fall color change. But there's a lot of show going on.
I've really appreciated the oaks this year. And maybe it was that modeling you were talking about, how the leaves didn't really change all one color, because I've been looking at these oak trees and it's like every leaf is a palette of five or six different colors.
Wow.
Green, you know, it's like a star. They're like starburst trees. They just got green and orange and kind of this pinky salmon and bright red, just like all in one tree.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
Now, are you familiar with the fact that, well, I'm calling it a fact, it's an observation, that a number of times I've seen oaks holding leaves all through winter?
So
some or all of them.
The northern red oak, I believe, holds its leaves all winter in that brown state.
Yep.
Not sure why. So it might be a species thing.
Because the white oak family, a very large family of trees, apparently doesn't do that as well.
Yeah, I think bur oak also, yeah, will drop
its
leaves right away.
Yeah, that's our main white oak family member up here is the bur oak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. Well, we had an incredible conversation a couple of weeks ago, Michaela. I just want you to know how people were grateful for you bringing us Margie from the Hawk Hill Observatory. And right after we spoke, there was a 1 billion bird night, first ever recorded, apparently, by the Birdcast folks. It's a collaboration with the Cornell Ornithological Lab. And
yeah, I wonder who told you about that Birdcast thing.
Just some real professional type.
Like Margie, she was great. She was the real professional around here. She had the info. And I've been thinking about that, billions of birds as well coming from the north. So it's so cool that we hit kind of this record, and likely due to this pressure system change she referred to, right?
Yeah.
And so these birds are really held back. And then, boom, the weather changed. And yes, they were migrating. I had like groups of sandhill cranes that drew me out of my apartment because I could hear them, right? A lot of the other birds are pretty quiet besides
It's a geese. Very distinct sound
and
that
so
sandhills
I was just
make.
Like, oh my gosh, there are those birds we're talking about, but those must be ones that flock together. You know, I'm thinking about about all the birds on the subway and like the lonely like great blue heron that's just like in the mess with everyone else, but like not with its cohort,
kind of,
you know? And I just
alone
love that
in a
analogy.
Crowd?
Yeah, I love that. So
great blue heron looks around and goes, boy, none of these look like me.
Yeah, like I'm a little big.
We saw a group of about a dozen sandhills flying near the shore in Larsmont just a week or so ago, and it made me think back to Margie's conversation with us, too. A sad thing of note, I think it's worth noting because there's hopefully a lesson in it for us, is that on the night of the billion bird migration, there were like 1,000 birds killed just on one skyscraper tower
in
Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's like 1 billion songbirds a year killed by collisions with our structures, and we can all do a little bit at our own homes, and there are things you can look up on the internet to try to reduce the bird strike at your windows, because windows are beautiful things to look through, but not so much for some birds at the wrong time of the day and then their migratory patterns.
We've had a huge drop off of window strikes since we got our UV stickers up. I mean, it was maybe a few birds every morning. And I'm thinking, man, a few birds every morning for just a few weeks. That's like 50, 100 birds that we could just, you know, we can eliminate. So,
yeah.
And it was very noticeable as soon as we put them up. Staff was not finding bird strikes after that. So
fantastic.
It is something, yeah, that's in our power to do.
Yeah. So folks, yeah, that interweb does give us ways to research this. And I'm sure some of the techniques, some of the stickers, some of the applications you could do on the windows are better than others, but doing something is better than nothing for sure.
Yeah. I think we find that the UV is better than just shapes on the window.
Okay.
I think it's giving the birds a lot more cues than
good
than the just shapes.
Okay.
Blocky shapes.
So people so check that out. UV treatments. Mm-hmm. Okay. Michaela, the time flies, and I have to get out of here, but not without giving you a chance to give us some highlights of what's still coming up and activities that you're holding.
Hosting. So yeah, it's already halfway through October, but on the 20th, this Friday, I'll be at the Two Harbors Library. So if you know any kiddos under the age of 16, let's say, send them over at 11 o'clock. We'll be doing a little fun hour-long program about loons.
Oh,
and then
cool.
Next week on the 23rd, most kiddos will be in school and stuff during this time, but so mostly adults will probably be available to come to the community creations from 2 to 4 at the Two Harbors Public Library, and that is free. You don't need to sign up. Come anytime and just come meet me, make something, bring questions if you want.
So if you could remind us, because we've talked many times in the past about the nature creations. So community creations, just a slight spin of the language there. You bring a number of items that people can work with, or should be people also?
No, you don't have to bring anything. If there's something that you have that you kind of want to integrate into an art piece or work with, or like you have a rock you want to paint or something, but I have feathers and sticks and pieces of, you know, wood that we can paint on. And yeah, I'm bringing all the materials.
All right. People can just show up and you'll help them visualize where to go.
I have some pieces that people kind of can look at and be like, oh, that's interesting. Or, you know, I use a lot of feathers in my stuff. So I do have things out to inspire people and get people kind of on their way. And then we just see what happens.
Well, it is so interesting because so much of the time we think of artwork as people doing drawings, things that are essentially two-dimensional.
No,
and
these are
very
3D.
And this is a lot of textures.
Yep.
A lot of geometries.
Very tactile. I'm a very tactile person. So this is my chance to kind of encourage other people to play with these items. And kids are so creative. And they just love, even just like looking at the different pine cones I have or the bark, they just get really excited about that. And I think adults do too. We just hide it a little bit better.
Yeah. We're damping our flame a little bit. We just got to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 4 p.m. on the 23rd of October. Do you know what day of the week that is? Michaela,
I believe it's Tuesday, Monday.
I think it's a Monday.
Okay.
Now that I quickly counting ahead from
Monday.
Our Harvest Moon Gala, it's
Look
Monday.
On the calendar, Monday.
Oh, calendar is always right in the KTWH studios.
And then, Leo, one last thing. Jackie Fallon is coming to Gooseberry Falls, also Teta Gooch. So check online for the time if you want to see Jackie at Teta Gooch, but come to Gooseberry Falls this Friday to see Jackie at 1:30 to 3:30. So you can come anytime in between that. She's in the theater. It's literally just open door policy. I don't know. I think she actually has a new bird in her care. I think it's a male peregrine. I don't know if she travels with him.
Okay.
But we'll be asking about that. Otherwise, it would be probably her large female rye or her little American kestrel, Juliet.
Okay. So that's this Friday, the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Gooseberry is a... Did you say
1:30 to 3:30.
Okay. If you're listening to the repeat of this on Saturday, we're sorry you did miss it, but you can still catch the community creations on Monday, the 23rd. Wow, that time has flown. Michaela, thank you for coming in. And we'll talk about how we revise the schedule going into November, but I'm so glad you could make it today.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening and for the great feedback and interest in these topics. And continue to tell Leo your thoughts.
Which I will hopefully convert into questions. And Michaela will say, oh, more homework. It's all good. It's a cycle. Thanks, Michaela. We'll see you next time. We'll see you on the radio.
Hey, I was going to say it. I'll say it next time.
Yeah.
See you on. Okay, bye.
All right. That's Michaela Rice, the naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park. And this is Leo for KTWH.